Welcome to the Stress Nanny Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Miller, and I'm delighted that you're here. This is a solo episode today. We're going to talk about four reasons teaching kids emotional intelligence is challenging. And I think it's important to put this skill set into context because sometimes as parents, we can give ourselves a really hard time if our kids are acting out, if they're having meltdowns either at home or other places, if their anxiety is kind of keeping them from doing things that they love or withdrawing, we see them maybe shying away from friendships or activities. We see them fighting us about going to places that they used to love. And it's really hard to watch, right? Like we can see those things happening and then we can wonder what's going on. We try different things. We're not sure what the root cause is and we're not sure how to get them out of it. You know, we're looking at different experts, we're reading books, or we're listening to podcasts like this. We're talking about, you know, all the different ways we're trying to help them. And when it's not working, it can be so, so frustrating. So I want to share these reasons today just so that you can maybe give yourself a little bit of a break in your efforts to share these tools with your kids. Like, don't beat yourself up that it's not maybe landing the way you're hoping it would, because there are, you know, specific reasons that it's really tricky. And then I want to talk to you about the benefits of having someone with a bit more neutrality. So we'll go into that later on. But first of all, the four reasons. The first one is you love them. Like these are your babies, right? These are your kiddos. You are devoted to their well-being. You have taken care of them from the time they were tiny. You have watched them grow. You know their sweet moments and their sassy moments. There are so many things about them that just make you swoon. And then also they can drive you crazy, but that's part of loving them. You're so invested. And when we're so invested in our kids, we want the best for them. So seeing them struggle or seeing them, you know, dysregulated, like not able to handle their own emotions frequently, it really throws us off. And it's scary and hard because we're like, this isn't going to serve you. Like you need to have different skills than you have right now in order to be a successful human. I love you and I want you to know those skills. And sometimes while the investment of a parent is so important, sometimes just like our strong desire for them to learn a thing can serve a little bit like the opposite of a magnet, right? Like the polar end of a magnet where you're pushing it together and it's kind of pushing itself away. If we are super invested in the process of our kids learning emotional intelligence and our kids don't want anything to do with it, sometimes our attempts are repelled in the same way that magnet pushes away. And so it's so tricky because they need that love, right? They need the love and the desire for well-being that you have for them. And also sometimes it gets in the way of them accepting your wisdom around something. Another reason that it's hard is that you or someone else you love, like one of their siblings or your partner, are often a part of what is triggering them. So you're in this really messy, complex situation where you're trying to serve as a referee between people that you completely adore. And that's hard because you can't be neutral. A lot of times you're like, well, actually, there is a consequence for that. And I have to carry out the consequence. Even though I also in this moment want to be able to listen to you and help you work through what you're feeling, because I understand what you're feeling. I also understand what your brother's feeling. And at the end of the day, you actually hit your brother. And so we have to, you know, take action to kind of mitigate further injury and then also, you know, make sure it seems kind of fair. And so in an effort to be fair, we're often in a position where like we're feeling triggered by the action of the child and having kind of a hard time refereeing the moment. And then we're also in a position where it's like if we listen to one kid and validate their feelings, does that invalidate the feelings of another kid? Or, you know, if we listen to our child's complaint about a partner or spouse, does that then like change our allegiance? Or, you know, how does that work? And it gets really complicated and tricky. And on top of an already tiring job of parenting, the process of kind of teasing out the important aspects of conflict or understanding which emotions are at play and giving space to give voice to those emotions, process them neutrally and work through them. It's all very challenging. And yet that's the process that it takes in order to help kids, you know, develop that emotional awareness and cultivate emotional intelligence over the lifespan. is being able to sit, you know, with a level of neutrality in the emotion that they're in, whatever it is, you know, and whatever the consequences of that emotion or whatever the precipitation of, you know, that emotion was. So whatever led up to it or whatever comes after it, our ability to sit with our child in that moment and just be present with what it looks like right now for them is crucial to them developing the skills to regulate the emotion. But it's just sometimes really hard to show up and play that role, and then to play that role for a lot of different people in the same household. Another reason it's tricky is that you probably didn't learn these things when you were growing up. So while you know there's a better way to handle it, you don't exactly know what that way is. Or if you do, you just don't have a ton of practice with it. And so in the moment when you're kind of feeling flustered, you have a lot going on. Again, you have multiple beloved people in front of you who are not getting along. It's so tricky to pull those tricks like out of your bag and then employ them in the moment when everybody's just feeling such a heightened amount of emotion. And so because it's not second nature to you yet, then it's really, really hard to have the presence of mind and also just the access to the tools that would be the most appropriate in that moment. Like all of those things coming together is really tricky. And so I think that a lot of times as parents, we can say, like, I know I want to do it different than maybe what I experienced. And I just don't know what that looks like. I don't know in this moment how to apply what I do know about more measured emotional expression or about how to communicate during conflict in a way that isn't as hurtful. And to be fair, so much of this research came about because, like, as humanity, we're evolving and growing and improving, and we have capacity for this kind of emotional growth that maybe we didn't have as much capacity for, you know, 40-ish years ago. And so it just wasn't as prevalent. Like, we're just working toward maybe a different level of development. And so it's not your fault. It's not your parents' fault necessarily, you know, depending on the situation, but it's generally like a skill set that is coming of age right now. And because a lot of us as parents have already come of age and the skill set wasn't around to kind of like grow with us, we're having to hurry and scurry and, you know, accumulate the skills in the thick of parenting, which is already a job where you have to accumulate a lot of skills all at once and adapt and adjust and help kids grow in their own unique way. And so adding this one more really big thing is challenging. It's really hard to do on the fly. And if you're trying it, kudos to you. And trying it is better than not trying it. But it's often frustrating because we're like, I need to know more than I know in this moment in order to help. And that can make us feel helpless. And helplessness is never a really comfortable place to sit when we're trying to foster that neutrality, to listen to our kids explain how they're feeling or help them sort how they're feeling. Helplessness can get in the way. And so if you're feeling helpless, know that you're not alone and that there is support available, and that so many parents are in the position that you're in where you're like, this is so hard. It's really hard to do. And also, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, in addition to all the other things we say that about in parenting. And also, I really want my kid to have these skills. Like, I want this to be a part of my home. I want it to be a part of what they remember about growing up in our home, is this sense of like acceptance and love and support and emotional steadiness. Like, I want that for my kids, but I'm just having a tough time sharing it. I don't know how to. I don't know what it looks like maybe for this one child in particular. What I'm sharing works for the other ones, but not this one. So know that you're not alone with that. And then finally, it is exhausting. Like, when we're trying to teach little kids how to regulate emotion, it is tiring because it takes so long to teach, right? There are so many years that go into the process of teaching kids emotional regulation. It starts when they're just itty, itty bitty, right? Just when they're born. And when we're interacting with them and when we're kind of like letting emotion take up space in our relationship or in our home, and we're adapting to it and we're naming it and we're, you know, and then eventually we're helping kids figure out how to express it. And then there are just so many components to it, right? And it's monotonous. We're doing it over and over and over again. And our kids are getting in the same fights over and over and over again. And we're like, this isn't even worth it. Why am I even trying? This is so exhausting. And I think that it's so important to remember that it is those small moments. It is like that steady effort that helps kids build the foundation that they need in order to be successful and emotionally intelligent teens and adults. And that's not to say we have to do it perfectly, right? We're all going to stumble. There's no magic wand moment for this where it's like, and all of a sudden they have the skill, right? It's going to be over time, this cultivation. They're going to show the skill sometimes and we're going to be like, oh my gosh, they finally got it. And then the next day they're going to do something completely different and you're going to think like, this child has never been able to manage emotion in their life. You know, that's just development and growth, right? It's like one step forward, two steps back. And we see it and we just feel tired because we know like I'm going to be having this conversation for the next 17 years. It's just a part of parenting. But I am reminded of a story from when I first had my daughter. I had some good friends who had older kids. I had my daughter when I was in my late 20s and most of my friends had kids before me. And so I had some friends who were parenting teenagers at the time I was parenting a two-year-old. And so it was really interesting to listen to their stories because I was doing my best to do the work that we're talking about, like acknowledge emotion, approach it with as much neutrality as I could. So, oh, you're feeling angry because you don't want to put your shoes on before we go to the park. That's angry. I can see that. So I can see you have a lot of angry energy right now. You know, things like that, so that we could name the emotion, we could talk about what it was, what it, you know, like there are a lot of different ways we could handle anger. There's a lot of ways we can show our anger. Throwing your shoes at mommy is not the best way. So let's think of another way. How could you express your anger and get that angry energy moving without throwing your shoes at mommy? And, you know, we're big, like go hit your pillow people in our house. And so we hit a lot of pillows. I also had a punching bag, like a blow-up punching bag. So we'd go hit that. If we were angry, you know, throwing your shoes at mommy is not okay, but hitting the punching bag is an okay way to express anger. So why don't we go do that? In our house, the rule was that you couldn't hurt anything living with your anger. So a pet, a plant, or a person. And so when we would talk about it, again, like we're having that conversation about the shoes and then we're having it again another day about the seatbelt and then we're having it another day about the pants and then we're having it another day about the hairdo, like, right? It just goes on and on and on. And at the time I had friends who, you know, I'd be around them and they'd see me taking a deep breath and trying to muster as much patience as I could to respond to this tiny person in front of me. And one of them took me aside one time and she said, Lindsay, I just want you to know it's worth it. I know it's so hard. I know in these moments you just want to make her do the thing that you want her to do and tell her to like buck up and not be mad about it. And she said, and the process of teaching her what anger is and how to manage it, it takes effort. And I see you making the effort. And I just want you to know when they're teenagers, that effort is so worth it. I have never forgotten that conversation because it was kind of like a light for me. And I would think back to it multiple times over the course of parenting my toddler and elementary age child, because there are moments when it feels like, can I just wait to teach this skill later? Like I'm exhausted because I'm not even getting a full night's sleep. I do not want to be having this conversation day in and day out. And I feel like I cannot reason with this child and there's just no point. And I would remember that conversation that like waiting to teach the skills until later, like we can teach them later, but if we can just weave them into our children's lives from the beginning or as early as possible, we give ourselves the gift of a teenager who can communicate. Teenagers are still going to be moody, right? They're still going to feel all the big feelings and they're going to have less ability to manage it at some moments of adolescence just because of the way their brains are rewiring and kind of preparing for adulthood. But it can be so beautiful to see our teenagers in a space where they have the words for what they're feeling and they have the tools to navigate those feelings. And then they have the ability to ask for support when they're feeling those feelings. And even though we're not going to, you know, have teenagers who are emotion free, we are going to have teenagers who are able to manage emotion with more skill. And while it's exhausting when they're tiny people, it is so incredible when they're teens. And so I would share that same message with you today in terms of teenagers and tiny kids and the importance of like allowing those emotional skills to develop early. In listening to my friend, I did keep up the effort, right, and continue wherever I could to create this intentional environment around emotion. And that has paid off. There have been so many great conversations we've had, so many moments that, you know, while the emotions were still big, we could talk through them, we could work with them, and we could take our relationship to a place of connection as opposed to just being at each other's throats. And so I think, yeah, the effort is worth it. And then I just want to share a couple of the reasons why having someone neutral can really offer a really massive level of support. Like I mentioned earlier, when we have people in our home who are feeling really dysregulated, often it's due to another person in our home. So when you have someone neutral, so for example, the kids that I coach with mindfulness, I have groups and individual calls. And so on my individual calls, especially, I can listen impartially, right? Like I can validate the feelings. And even when I have siblings, I have multiple families where I have siblings, and I can love all of the siblings and have complete respect for all of the siblings, and then spend one-on-one time just listening impartially and saying like, yeah, that must have been hard. I recognize that happened last week too. So you really must have been feeling picked on. Or, you know, I can give them the space to feel the thing that they're feeling, and it doesn't feel threatening to the other person because the other person isn't there. It's just their time to kind of sort through their feelings with someone who can help them figure out what happened, what's going on, what they're feeling, and then move through it. Another thing that can be helpful is I'm not triggered by the same things as you. So I can see behaviors, and because I haven't seen it 14 times that week, it's not as triggering to me. Right? Just like simply because I'm not in the thick of it, I'm getting a small glimpse of some of the emotional load or some of the, you know, tricky conflict conversations that you're seeing. And because I'm just getting a small little piece of them, I can approach it with a different level of neutrality and a different level of just calm. And so that can be helpful because we can move through stuff with a little bit more efficiency. And it makes for a conversation that just doesn't get more reactive, but gets more mellow. So we can mellow out instead of get more reactive as a result. Another reason is that I know child development phases, so often I can put behavior into a broader context. So while we might be able to just kind of zoom in and see a behavior or a conflict through a certain lens and say, we know exactly why this happened, or you always do it this way, I can zoom out and see, okay, developmentally, what's happening right now? Or where is the next step for this child? And sometimes when we're making comparisons between kids, or we're thinking about like where a child needs to be in order to be successful, there's a really big gap in between where they are now and where we want them to be. And I, just because of my training, can see the tiny steps in between the gap. And so I know how to get from one step to the next step to the next step, so that eventually we make our way, you know, to where we want them to be, or where developmentally, you know, it would serve them to be. But initially, we just like take them where they're at, and we can accept that and move from there. And that neutrality serves in that moment, because I'm not worried that they're not going to get there. I'm just worried about the next step. And I trust the process and know that we're going to eventually get to a place of higher development. Another reason that a neutral voice like mine can be helpful is that I can normalize the situation for the child. So again, along with those developmental phases, I have talked to a lot of kids and I know a lot about emotions. And so I can say, you know, it makes so much sense that you would have felt that way. Or I can really see how those experiences combined led to such a strong emotion for you. I can also ask really great questions that help kids determine for themselves what just happened, or why an emotion seems particularly sticky, or why an emotion seems particularly big. The other day I was on a call where we were talking about several things that had happened recently. And then, you know, kind of like one moment that, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. And it felt like a really big deal. And a lot of that was because there were a few moments leading up to it that maybe the child had been like, oh, you know, trying to talk themselves through, like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. I shouldn't be upset about this. It's not that big of a deal. But then it got to the point where enough people, you know, had offered a criticism that then they felt like, okay, this is a really big deal. And all those emotions that had kind of just been shoved down were able to surface and get processed. And it's normal that that would happen, that when we shove emotion down and then eventually have an experience that kind of taps into it, that it kind of explodes out. And so that's a normal thing. So a lot of times kids will feel bad for having those kinds of reactions, or they'll feel silly for having a certain emotion that seemed really, you know, much bigger than the moment at hand. And we can just normalize and like move through, like, yeah, makes sense that that would be the case for you. Let's, you know, not beat ourselves up for having the emotion. Let's acknowledge it, work through it, and then, you know, find ourselves on the other side of it. Another way neutrality can be helpful is, so for example, when I talk to kids, I'm a bit of a wordsmith, so I can listen and reflect back what they told me in an empowering, growth-oriented way. A lot of times when we're in the thick of tricky situations with our kids or conflicts, we are not in a position to start getting creative about our phrasing. We're just not. And so in a more neutral perspective, I can say, oh my gosh, so in that moment, you experienced something you had never done before. So what you were really doing was feeling like the little bit of nervousness that comes with learning a new thing. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's normal to be a little nervous when you're learning a new thing, instead of like, I have anxiety and I can't do this, right? And so when we can reflect back to them in an empowering way, we really, really open up the floodgate for growth, because we help them see all their experiences, the opportunities for growth, and we give them the chance to process their experiences in an empowering way. And that makes all the difference, because if we can train kids to see their strengths in the thick of challenges, we give them a gift they will build on for the rest of their lives. They will see themselves as strong and capable individuals no matter what comes their way. Another reason someone neutral can be helpful is, like for me, I have tons of tools. I have metaphors and stories and tools and activities. And so I can help kids recognize what they're feeling and help them move through. And when you have someone who has practiced being neutral and then practiced explaining emotion in a way that is very concrete or very accessible to kids, we make it doable for them, right? Like they feel like they can totally understand what's going on, and they have something they can do to help themselves feel better, or a tool they can use to make it through a tricky or hard moment. And so giving our kids opportunity to be around a neutral voice with tools is a gift that gives back again and again and again. And then another reason having some neutrality can be helpful is just like the ability to listen deeply. Sometimes in the day-to-day, you know, those days and moments when you're just going from one thing to the next and you're trying to think of all the other things that have to get done that day. You're trying to make sure everyone has some sort of nourishment. You're trying to make sure there's a decent amount of sleep happening. It's just a lot. And so it's sometimes really tricky to put on that deep listening hat in the hustle and bustle of every day. And so when you're with someone neutral, like I am a seasoned listener and have had a lot of experiences just, you know, in settings where listening was my only job. And so that is what I do by nature, right? Like I'm able to do that in a really easeful way. And so that neutrality coupled with the ability to listen deeply, no matter what's going on, it creates a level of efficiency for kids that maybe it's hard to access in daily life. The efficiency comes because if we can kind of cut to the chase and get to what's like really bothering them, if we can get to like the heart of the issue, then we start to figure out what strengths the child has to navigate it. Then we figure out how to put those strengths into practice in that moment. And then we figure out how to communicate with the people we need to communicate to make it through that moment. And when you can listen deeply, the steps that are needed, you know, in that sequence, they're much easier to access. And so again, in crazy, like get out the door on your way to school life, it's just really hard to stop and make eye contact and lean forward, have the kind of conversations that can help that kind of learning happen. But on things like my coaching calls or my mindfulness club, we create a space for that neutrality to show up, right? Where all those skills can come into play, where they can be listened to impartially and deeply, where it's a neutral space where child development and just everyday emotional tasks are normalized, and then we frame them in ways that are growth-oriented, and then share tools, practice communicating, and develop the skills of self-awareness to make sure that, like, the emotional intelligence that's being cultivated can then be practiced throughout the week in the child's life, and then slowly, slowly, slowly the skills come online. And then all of a sudden, you're not the only one teaching it, right? Like, you have a neutral invested party like me on your team. And then you're in the position of helping them reinforce the skills. And it's not your idea necessarily. Like, it's my idea. So it takes a little bit of the load off of you, and it takes a little bit of the combativeness, because you can, like, defer to what I'm doing, or you can defer to what I said, well, you should do that week in your house to practice or whatever. And so, and it also gives kids a level of independence, because they've been able to work through and sort their emotions with someone who's listening neutrally. And it allows them to have some ownership, which then makes them feel like they can have those conversations with you more as an equal partner. Like, the power differential in those moments can sometimes be really beautifully navigated, where they can, you know, you can both come together as learners, instead of you feeling like you're floundering as a learner, but also needing to teach. We can all be learning together. So give yourself a bit of a break, even if it's just a mental break, in terms of why it's tricky to teach kids emotional intelligence. And then also, don't hesitate to reach out. I have a ton of different podcast episodes. I'd be happy to share any resources with you that I have either created or am aware of. And also, I have my mindfulness club and my individual coaching. Let's make sure your child has that neutral space, both so that, like, you can have a little bit less responsibility when it comes to having to learn and teach at the same time, and also so that they can develop the skills that they need that they're going to use for the rest of their lives. I love watching kids see their strengths and then use those strengths to move through struggle. It is so beautiful, and it's really, really possible when we take a mindful approach. Thanks again for being here. I hope this was helpful. Until next time.